Hi, and welcome back to the Mindful Sport Performance Podcast. I'm Dr. Keith Kaufman.
I'm Dr. Tim Pinnell.
And we are very excited to be joined today by Mark Capone. Mark is a composer, a performer, and a music teacher based in Washington, D.C. He is a proud member of the band Rocknoceros and has performed thousands of shows all over the country, including at the Kennedy Center, Lollapalooza, Austin City Limits, and the 930 Club. Apart from Rocknoceros, Mark's written music for MTV and the History Channel and has earned 9 Washington Area Music Awards. You can listen to his music through your favorite music streaming services or through his website, markcaponi.com. And that's spelled MarkCaponi.com. So thank you so much, Mark, for making the time to join us this morning. We so appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you for inviting me. It is very flattering to get the invitation to come speak to you all.
Well, we appreciate that. And you have the honor of being our first musician that we have talked to on our podcast. And so we are super excited to hear the different perspectives you'll be able to bring and to talk about aspects of mindfulness and performance as it relates to music. And I've had the privilege of seeing you perform a number of times, and full disclosure, you are my music teacher. You have worked with my son and I for a couple of years now, and so I can vouch for just what a great job that you do and how you use mindfulness in your work.
I guess I shouldn't nod on an audio podcast. Yes, thanks, Keith. It's been great working with you and your son. three years
I think we might have just passed the 2-year anniversary.
Okay,
so yes, so as usual, we want to begin our episode today with just a short practice, and our usual disclaimer here that if you are driving or somewhere where you can't close your eyes or can't bring full attention to the exercise, then you know, maybe a good idea to just listen for now and wait until you can stop and give your full attention to the practice. What we will do today, we're going to do just a short body scan practice. In MSPE, we do a much longer version of this, but just to give us a little taste and to help us kind of get in the mood to talk mindfulness for today, just do a short couple minutes of getting in touch with our bodies. So if we want to just take a moment and just begin by closing our eyes. And just perhaps feeling our bodies making contact with whatever it's making contact with right now, whether it's a seat or the floor. And just taking a moment to get in touch with our breath. Just feeling the air coming in, perhaps through our nose or our mouth, and going all the way down and allowing our abdomen to expand, and the air coming back out. And just taking a few moments to follow a few breath cycles that way. And for this exercise, what we're going to do is take a brief tour of our bodies with our attention, beginning at the bottoms of our feet and moving our attention up to the top of our heads. And it might be helpful to think of your attention almost like a laser beam, where you can focus in on a particular body part or region and just notice whatever's there, and then let go when we move on to the next region and bring your full attention to that part. So let's begin by taking this laser beam of attention and moving down into our left foot. perhaps starting with our toes. And just exploring our foot, noticing whatever sensations are present. Any feelings of warmth or cool. Perhaps any contact your foot is making with the floor or a sock or a shoe. And just noticing whatever is present there, not needing it to be any different than what it is. And now moving your attention up your left leg from the ankle up into the calf and the shin. And taking a moment to explore your left knee with this laser beam of attention. Just noticing whatever sensations are there. And if you're an athlete, perhaps noticing any soreness from any training that you've done. Just being present with any sensations. Not good, bad, right, or wrong. Just noticing. Now moving your attention up to the upper portion of your left leg. Exploring your thigh. And then back around into your hamstring. And now taking a moment perhaps and just broadening this laser focus of attention slightly to include your entire left leg. Just feeling every part at once. And now narrowing that laser focus again and moving down into our right foot. Into your toes. Moving up your foot. And then into your ankle and up into your shin and around to your calf. And now taking a moment to explore your right knee. Appreciating this joint and everything that it does. And now moving your attention up to the upper part of your right leg, into your thigh, and around into your right hamstring. And again, we're just noticing, just being present. And taking a moment now and gently expanding your focus slightly to include your whole right leg. Again, just feeling that entire limb and everything that's going on there at once. And now letting go of your legs and moving this laser focus of attention up into your hips. Just feeling whatever's there, just breathing with it. And then moving up into your abdomen. Perhaps you can feel your abdomen expanding and contracting with the breath, or perhaps not. Maybe you can detect feelings of hunger, feelings of being full. Maybe this is an area that's sensitive for you. Whatever you notice coming up as you focus on your abdomen is okay. Just let it be a part of your awareness. Just be present with you. And now gently let it go as you move your attention up your torso and into your chest. And take a moment and see if you can find your heartbeat. See if you can connect with this subtle rhythm of your life. And now move your attention around into your back. Perhaps starting with your lower back, an area that oftentimes we hold some tension and might be very sensory rich for us. And just noticing whatever's there. and then moving your attention up into your upper back. And into your neck. And again, appreciating perhaps this is an area that we hold tension, that's tight. And seeing if you could take a few breaths and just let it loosen just a little bit. And now moving our attention into our arms, perhaps starting with the left arm, moving your laser focus down through your biceps, your triceps, into your elbow, and then all the way down into your left hand, and just noticing perhaps what your fingertips are making contact with. There's so many nerves, so much to sense in our fingertips, and just noticing what's there. And then letting go of that and moving your laser focus over to your right arm. And again, guiding your attention down from your right shoulder down into your biceps, your triceps, your elbow, your forearm, and into your right hand and right fingertips, and just noticing. And then letting go of your right hand and moving your attention up into your face. And just noticing if you're holding tension there, noticing any sensation, however small, perhaps you can feel a slight breeze blowing into your face, or perhaps you can get in touch with your senses, maybe check in with what you're smelling. If there's a taste in your mouth, just noticing whatever's there. And then moving your attention to the very top of your head. And just breathing here at the very top of your body, taking it all in. And perhaps allow your attention again to widen and expand, but this time to cover your whole body at once. Just feel the complete rhythm of your life, the complete rhythm of your body, as all of these different parts work together to keep you alive and allow you to do all the amazing things you do every day. Whether that's sports or play music or sit at a computer and type, whatever it is that you do, just appreciating your body for a moment and all the amazing ways that it functions. Just being present and connected. Now take just a couple more breaths, just following those cycles all the way from the in-breath into the out-breath. And when you're ready, you can open your eyes or refocus around the room and bring your attention back to your surroundings. So our MSPE version of the body scan is one of our longer exercises. And so I tried to condense that a little bit. Of course, it takes some amount of time to be able to travel around the body. So this practice was slightly longer than some of the other ones we've done on the podcast. But sort of curious, I know Mark and Tim, you were practicing along with me. If you guys had any reactions or what your experiences were with that?
It worked for me. It was a good one. The body scan, interestingly, one of the guided meditations that I do a lot is from your MSPE series. It's kind of the first one. It perhaps is the first guided meditation I ever did. And it starts with bringing your attention. It doesn't do a full body scan, but it starts with bringing your attention to the tips of your toes. And with each in-breath, sort of following the attention up your body. And just now doing it worked very well, but I always have a hard time doing it when I'm sitting cross-legged. Because when I try to follow my breath up from my toes, it gets very confusing for me. when my legs are crossed. And I know I shouldn't get too wrapped up in the details of where, you know, in the legs I am, but it's sitting in a chair just now. It was nice to go through it and actually really be able to follow it all the way up my leg.
Yeah. You know, I don't know if this is part of the experience that you were describing, but I end up talking to a lot of people about it, right? That they put shoulds around like how a meditation should feel or how they should be sitting or whatever. And like, yeah, I've had that experience too, where you're sitting cross-legged and you're like, I'm on my left foot. Wait a second, now it's on my right side. Because right, like, and you do, you get lost in those details. It's like, oh, I could just straighten my legs, right? But we don't always just give ourselves that permission. But then, right, we have these experiences, and it's like, oh, right, that's totally different. And I'll at least share that I that was a kind of a really interesting mix of reactions for me, because actually my right knee has been bothering me recently. I've been training a lot, and so yeah, I've got a lot of mixed feelings about that. So when we got to my knee, I was feeling both nervous and grateful because it doesn't hurt today. And so I was like, oh, like I feel really good about that. But oh my God, is it gonna hurt again later? Like, oh, maybe I should do some more yoga. You know, just like all the, I like immediately felt all those thoughts come rushing back in. But then kind of as it went on, I really felt myself settle. And felt myself, I had the thought like, oh God, I just wish I could just meditate for hours every day. It just feels so good, which I know is not always my experience of meditation or anyone's experience of meditation. But so yeah, real roller coaster for me today.
I think, and we've touched on this, I know, in so many of our conversations, but I think it's come up on the podcast before too, how no matter how much you practice this stuff, no matter how much you teach this stuff, your mind still judges. We still find ways to should. We still find experiences that it's, oh, I hope I don't feel that today, right? And so I'm always impressed, Tim, with your authenticity in this. I think you do such a good job of talking about as you teach this. You know, like, yeah, this comes up for me too. And I think that's, you know, for anyone who's listening to this who maybe wants to teach mindfulness themselves or certainly has a mindfulness practice, that there's no finish line in terms of, you know, not being judgmental anymore or liking all of the experiences that come up for us and how this always happens, right? And every practice we have is a little bit different. But I like, and I think Mark and Tim, you were both getting at this idea of choice, right? That's something we come back to so often in MSPE, that when something comes up, we have a choice in how we relate to it, whether we choose to move our leg, or just, you know, choose to welcome in an uncomfortable thought, that just because something comes up doesn't mean that we can't do anything with it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Mark, one of the things that I wanted to be sure to ask you about today, and I think it's a good segue from what we were just talking about, I will never forget. So the first music lesson I ever had with you, you started talking about playing music by feel. And that was why, actually, knowing that we were talking to you today, why I wanted to do the body scan as an introductory practice, because it is, of course, this practice of connecting mind and body and really feeling, you know, what's happening. And so I wonder if you could talk about that a little bit, your feelings on playing music by feel and why you teach that way, what the philosophy is.
Yeah, let me try to think about what I would have been talking about then.
This was 2 years ago.
When I talk about feel, and when I start teaching a new group of people music, we won't start by reading and writing music. We don't do quarter notes. We don't do FACE, are the spaces on the treble clef. And a lot of people I teach, we never get to that. And I think it's because I think reading and writing music is a skill that is very valuable for some people. But if you just want to learn how to play music, it's a really difficult skill to it is reading music is not playing music. Just like you don't tell a child that they can't start speaking until they can read and write. It's, you know, you learn how it sounds, you learn how to communicate, and then you realize, oh, there are symbols that I can sort of represent this with also. That's cool. But they aren't necessary. They aren't necessary to be able to speak or to communicate. And the most important thing with music, I mean, you don't, when people buy music, they, it's audio. It is not on a page. So I think that if you approach learning music as something that comes from the page, I think you're just putting a really, really big obstacle between you and the actual thing that you're trying to learn. So I think it's important to, you know, not only stress that music is something that you hear, but it's really something that you feel as well. And now I know what I was probably talking about with you. The idea of you, your brain starts to feel these units of four. Your brain starts to put things together in phrases, kind of like sentences, and they're of a particular length. Music is very much a sense of your awareness of time is arguably the foundation of music. Your awareness of time, how you're going to divide the time, how you're going to interact with other people who are also dividing time. But it's this sense of you have to really be aware of how you are sharing time with other people who are playing music. So it's a feeling thing. It's definitely a feeling thing. And I like to stress that because I think a lot of parents, when you come over and, you know, sometimes they've got like a piano book or a music book. And I'm like, oh, yeah, we're not going to need that. You know, I think a lot of them think, well, you know, my kid, we've been playing for 6 months and my child still doesn't know what a quarter note is. And I mean, I think by 6 months, honestly, I think most of them are sold on the idea. Oh, wow, this is so much easier. You know, parents in particular, I took piano for 15 years when I was a kid and I can't do anything. And now, yeah, I'm starting to get it a little bit. So I don't know. Feel is what music is. In particular, it is feeling time and harmony too, but time.
Yeah. Well, and it's like, it sounds like you're saying, you know, music is experiential.
Yes.
Right? Like there's an intellectual component. You can intellectualize it and put it on paper, right? But like,
yes,
music, to play it and to hear it is experiential, which feels so connected to like how we talk about mindfulness, right?
Yes.
It's about having the experiences, about being present with it, being fully engaged with it. I was actually just talking, my son is almost two, and we had enrolled him in these kind of like music classes, which were really just them like banging things and throwing scarves up in the air. He had a great time.
Yeah.
But I remember the teacher talked about one of the most important things you can do is, if you're listening to music with your kid, tap the beat on them so that they can feel it. And that's how they start to internalize like rhythm. And and just that what you were saying really made me think about that.
Yeah, actually, that makes me think of, with some groups, I don't think I've done it with you, Keith, but sometimes we will spend a certain amount, and with some groups, it'll be a fair amount of the lesson dancing. We will just dance, and it'll be to whatever music the kids are listening to. It's generally with kids. I don't think I've ever done a dancing lesson where it's adults. I mean, there'll be adults there, but it's,
you remember if you had seen me dance. That was.
But yeah, dancing, you have to be able to do that and clap along with the beat. And then, you know, if you can't get that, then yeah, you might understand what music is on the page, but you're never going to be able to play music if you can't get beyond the point of, if you can't at least start clapping along with your favorite song or dance to your favorite song. If you got to master that. Or I'm not saying that there's no use in learning to read music. Maybe there would be a purpose to it. I don't know, but I don't think you'll ever really be able to play and communicate music with people if you can't clap and dance. You obviously don't have to dance well.
Sorry, it's the second time I tried to talk over you, Mark. My apologies. I'm like chomping at the bit here because I'm like, yes, exactly what you guys are saying. I never had music explained to me that way. I was that kid who took piano lessons and took music. I played several instruments growing up, and it was always off the page. It was always learning the notes. And you were the first teacher who kind of threw that all out the window in a way and talked about this rule of four and uh-huh. the way your brain connects and feeling the music and how, you know, we really worked on rhythm. We worked on clapping. We worked on finding the connectivity amongst the notes. And how that allowed me to experience music in a way that just was so enlightening. You know, my son is obviously young and really made it relatable to him, but also to me as an adult. And to realize that I could play music that I never would have thought possible much sooner because of how connected I was and seeing the connections between songs and we've talked a lot about patterns and mm-hmm. I think, Tim, as you said, that word experiential, and that is the bridge that I see so much between Mark's teaching style and mindfulness. And that started from day one. And what's so fascinating, and I won't belabor this too much, but now we've been working with you for 2 years, and now I think my son is really intrigued by some of the stuff on paper, is coming back and saying, well, wait, how does this connect to notes? Mm-hmm. Right. And as he's learning math and as he's seeing, it's
your
almost
son
like
in particular, I'm sorry to cut you off, but your son in particular has a knack for numbers. And I think it makes notating music becomes a little more fun when you are recognizing the connection between it and math.
Mm-hmm. But it's almost like we needed a couple of years of feel before that could even be appealing, right?
Yeah.
Which I love what you're saying, that, you know, when you walk in day one and someone wants you to pull out a songbook and start learning the notes, that may not be the best way to experience music as a beginner.
Yeah, I have older kids now, and we do stuff in standard notation. But with all of them that are doing standard notation, they're like, they're maybe preteen still. But we played for years without doing any standard notation. Wow. Standard notation is when you've got, you know, a treble clef, a bass clef. You write quarter notes and half notes and eighth notes on the page. That is standard notation.
You know, Keith, in the spirit of what you're saying before about how kind of we're always kind of learning and growing and recognizing new things about ourselves, right? With more self-awareness, I'm realizing that I have perhaps for my whole life put this weird kind of limitation on myself around music, because I played trumpet in school band when I was in like sixth grade, and it was that like learn the notes or whatever, and I never got into it and did that for a couple of years, and then it dropped off. But then I started playing the drums.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved the drums because mm-hmm. there wasn't that same kind of like, I got to know what all these different notes are, whatever. It was really, I could feel it. But that always, like, I had this kind of narrative about myself. Like, I'm just not musical. Like, I can't play music or I can't read music. I love music. And like, I played the drums for a little while, but I'm just like not a musical person. But maybe that was a limitation I put on myself because I just didn't, you know, get this style of teaching.
Learning to read and write music is a very time intensive study that, you know, it's a huge hurdle, but I mean, it just, you need to devote, like most things, you didn't need to devote a lot of time to be able to do it well. But a surprising number of people, I think, can just kind of pick up an instrument and with a very little amount of instruction you can show them a few things and they can play a song pretty quickly. But if you are going to limit what they're allowed to play to what they're allowed to read, the number of people who will be able to do it is going to drop dramatically.
But I think there's so many parallels to what you're saying and how we teach mindfulness and just the how you're saying it's accessible. You just have to kind of sit down and make space for it, and how mm-hmm. there might be this different way to engage it. And in our trainings, we see all the time, you know, the parallel here being that people want to approach it like standard notation. They want to know mm-hmm. the recipe. They want to know how mm-hmm. to, you know, put the notes together to make a song. And mm-hmm. and what we say is, well, this is a little different, you mm-hmm. know, mm-hmm. And we start with the experiential piece. And, you know, I don't think you use the word mindfulness with us right away. It was later on, we had some discussions like, you know, what you're doing, it's so mindful. And you and I had some fascinating discussions, Mark, about mm-hmm. connections mm-hmm. between music and mindfulness. And I know this isn't an accident. I know you've done some reading on this and have some mm-hmm. familiarity. And I mean, I would go so far as to say that what you're doing is pretty pioneering. This is pretty different. And so go ahead.
I don't know if I would go that far, but I would say that I am in a minority.
Well, that's what I was going to ask, is kind of how you came to this and why, right? At some point you probably decided this is how I want to do it. It works differently.
I taught music years ago, more traditional, but still not exactly traditional, but certainly more traditional. I felt as a teacher sort of an obligation to present certain stuff that now I don't feel that obligation at all. But I felt like I had to do certain things because that's just how you do it, you know? But as an adult, I can think of, like, I had a piano teacher, maybe 20 years ago now. And he learning to read music is typing. Anybody can do it if you're going to do it, but learning to play, that's where you're going to have to, you know, he's he equated to reading music to typing and not at all to playing music. But so that was sort of my first teacher, maybe, that didn't, there was no materials, quote unquote, as far as books or the like. You know, you just went in, you showed him what you were working on, and he would point out things that you could do differently and point out different ways to think about what you were doing, or point out different ways that you could play it all together. I've had, as an adult, it is easier to find teachers who are a little more just outside the norm. But now that I think about it, I would guess the vast majority of their students are advanced as far as music goes. Like, they probably all already know how to read music, and they probably all, you know, have been playing for many, many years. But Tim, what you said, these are coming up. These are becoming pretty popular for your two-year-old. You mentioned going to a class, and that's like a group session, probably. Yeah, those are becoming, I don't know if they were always popular. I don't remember them when I was a kid, but those are becoming more popular. And those are definitely, I mean, the kids are really young, so they're too young to learn how to read and write music, probably. I mean, every now and then you see one of these kids on YouTube who's like 4 years old working their way through some Rachmaninoff on the piano. But for the most part, you know, children that age are not going to be learning to read and write music. And those seem, what I've gathered at Rachmaninoff shows when parents tell me about them, and Willie Bob of Rachmaninoff, his daughter went to one. That was the first time I ever heard of it. And she's 20 now. So they've obviously been around for at least 20 years, where she and her mother went. This might have been a little bit different than what you were talking about, Tim, because it was a piano class. So she might have been a little bit older, and they were all sitting at a keyboard, and they were the mom, a parent and a child were learning in a group, you know, some basic keyboard stuff. But anyway, those small group children music lessons that generally seem to involve a lot of percussion and maybe dancing and clapping, those seem to be gaining popularity. And I think it's great, because that is, like, I have no I've had great teachers my whole way through, but certainly my first piano teacher, I mean, she taught me a lot. I'm not complaining about it, but I, at the time, did not really care for my piano lessons, although I was playing the piano all the time, I have to admit, not doing what I was supposed to be doing, perhaps, but I was playing a lot, and she was, you know, giving me a good foundation of what the traditional path should be or was.
And I think what you're saying, right, you've used this word a couple times in the last few moments, it's play. And we use play all the time with music, but yet so often it's all the fun is sucked out of the room, right? There's a right way to do it. Yeah. You said, it's like typing. And what was so different, certainly I can imagine with the classes, like what you guys are talking about, but also with the lessons we've had with you, is it really nurtured that kind of play, that kind of experimentation. And you know, my son was a young kid who wasn't learning sort of the traditional, you think about sitting down and your first couple songs you play on an instrument, or you know, those mm-hmm. ones you've never heard of that are sort of these classics. Mm-hmm. You were teaching us Beatles songs early on, you know, that have these simple rhythms, things that are relatable, that he'd heard, that we'd heard. You know, mm-hmm. his favorite band when he was little was Rocknosaurus. And so you were teaching us
that's
some
my band, Tim.
Yeah. Right. And so the fact that he was playing what he was hearing, and that even though as a young kid, that you were encouraging this kind of experience. And so again, just to kind of make this connection, I think there's something so mindful about that, something so refreshing, you know, that we talk about this with performance. It's not A plus B equals C. It's uh-huh. being able to experience things and be in touch with things, with your performance as it's unfolding as this organic thing, and seeing what you can do. As Tim was saying, maybe not putting a cap on things, on your expectations for mm-hmm. yourself. And so I think that there is just, whether you intended it or not, there is so much mindfulness that oozes out of your teaching style.
That's great to hear.
they're actually, and I know, I mean, we could spend a lot of time talking about this next thing. I would be remiss if I didn't ask you, because if you ever see Mark play with Rocknosaurus in person, what's so incredible about the way you perform is at least in Rocknosaurus, how many instruments do you play at the same time now? Are you up to three?
Well, I'm the drummer and the keyboard player / bass player. Keyboard players frequently will be the person, depending on the budget of the event that you're performing at, sometimes keyboard players will be the left-handed bass player as well. So mm-hmm. I am the left-handed bass player. And then my feet and my right hand, my feet always are playing the drums. So I've got a regular bass drum set up with my right foot. I've got a snare drum set up with my left foot using the same basic mechanism, and then a hi-hat cymbal also. So those two things you can control with your left foot. And then my right hand will either be playing stuff on the piano, or it will be playing cymbals and things like that. So,
you know, we talk about mindfulness and how you teach, but it's hard to imagine that you don't employ some kind of concentration technique, some kind of mindfulness skills in how you play to be able to integrate all of that. I mean, it just makes me dizzy to hear you talk about it. And I know when I watch you play, it's amazing because every limb is doing something different, and it's really keeping the band together, right? I mean, it's incredible what you do. So how do you do it?
I guess I do practice a decent amount, and I guess it's probably not as hard as it looks, maybe. It's just because if you think about a drummer, I played drums also as a teenager. In fact, the drums that I play with Rocknosaurus, I got when I was in fifth grade. Those are the same drums that I've had since fifth grade. So being a drummer, and Tim, you've dabbled with the drums. I mean, all your limbs are doing something different.
Yeah.
Just that, and it's not that, it's so the right limbs, my right hand and my right foot are playing a cymbal and a bass drum. Well, that's probably what you're already doing, Tim, when you play the drums. Then your left hand is frequently on the snare drum, and your left foot will frequently be clapping the hi-hat cymbal the same time you play the snare drum. So your left foot in the snare and your left hand are also kind of connected. And I just move that left foot from a hi-hat to the snare drum itself. And then I don't need my left hand anymore. But my left hand's used to doing something. Well, I'll just play the keyboard. And then the left hand is what you need to play the bass. And we don't have a bass player, so I play the keyboard with the bass. But it's not that different than playing a drum set. There's lots of stuff going on. It's just my left hand, instead of playing a snare drum, is playing a whole
different instrument.
Yeah. I feel like, I don't know if you're giving yourself enough credit here. I do remember like that stage of learning how to play the drums and like needing to figure out how to do different rhythms with different limbs. And like, I remember how challenging it was, but I also remember like those breakthrough moments where it was like, oh, my right foot and my left hand can move at different speeds. And just like kind of getting it. But right. It was like a lot of practice. And I think, a lot of like focus, patience, like a lot of concentration.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Well, something we want to, Mark.
When I have some new rhythm or groove that I need to learn, then I need to break it down real slow and start with, maybe one or two pieces of the whole pie and get those going really, really comfortable. And I think that's easier to do as an adult. And I think, Katie, the lacrosse coach that you guys had on, talked about time. What did she say? I mean, you got to make time for stuff. Something she said kind of resonated with me, because I've had a realization. I mean, it's not a new realization, but it's just every now and then it comes back to you. Is the fact that anything that you want to do, that you really kind of want to do it, I mean, that you want to learn to do, all of it takes a lot of time. And you have to be really, really patient. And you have to, I think as an adult, and especially applying like kind of mindfulness, you learn to accept the fact that you're not going to see a lot. You're not going to really see the progress over the vast majority of the time that you're putting in a lot of work. You're going to have these doubts that this is doing anything. But I think as an adult, you get a little more faith in the fact that I'm just going to keep doing it. Don't worry about it. Kind of like with mindfulness, or with meditation. Is this working? Is this working? Don't worry about it. Just sit there, just do it. And you do it and you do it. And eventually you do that with enough things that you realize, wow, if I do stick with stuff, even though I don't see any progress when I look at it, because I'm looking at too narrow of a little slice, if I stick with stuff, I do make progress. Yeah. And I think that's something that you don't, that I personally, that was not something that I realized until much later in life. And so, learning a new thing, it's like you start and you just go, I have no idea how long this is going to take, but I'm going to start and I'm going to do it regularly and spend some time really focusing on it. And, lo and behold, months later, hey, wow, I've got a new groove that sounds pretty good. Like I can play this legitimate little salsa thing while I'm playing this other thing on my left hand. And it sounds pretty comfortable.
Well, and that feels like actually a good kind of bridge to a question I was really curious to ask you coming into today. Kind of looking at the potential connections or parallel between sport, which is what Keith and I are focused mostly on, and this other kind of performance, right, in music and this other domain. We talk a lot about this thing called the mental training paradox. But basically, this idea that kind of any athlete would recognize that doing specific exercises, specific mental training, right, to help do that, to help kind of enhance that psychological piece of their play, right, is really important, right, just as important as like the physical training, right? Mm-hmm. Most athletes agree with this, right? And yet very few athletes actually do like dedicate that time to the mental training. And so I was curious if you felt like there was a similar kind of paradox, I guess, in music, that it's not just about sitting down and going through the motions, right? It's about actually focusing while you're going through those motions. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, how can musicians train that focus piece? And do you feel like maybe kind of like any given musician might say like, yeah, that piece is really important, but in fact, they don't really do anything like specifically to train that capacity for focus and presence and mindfulness?
I would say that most people agree that that component is important. And I would guess, if you practice sort of not mindfully enough, you will get better. You will improve. I was going to say that I wonder if most people, when they get to the level, have committed to, or when they get to a certain level, the only way you get there is by, you know, realizing at some point that you really have to not just be practicing, but you have to kind of be doing it in a relatively focused way. But maybe you could still get there if you just carved out the time and didn't, you know, I don't know what most people, I don't know what most other musicians would say if they feel like, I don't know what most other musicians would say, but.
I mean, it seems like in your approach, you really, again, I don't know if you think about it as mindfulness as such, or as the mental training paradox, like what Tim is speaking about, but it seems like you really want people to be present while they're playing.
Yes.
And encourage.
I want people to be present, period.
Yeah. Right.
Right. I mean, but that sounds like such a simple thing, but I guess what we find is that we don't really, as performers or coaches or teachers, necessarily train presence.
Yeah.
And I think that's something, again, that is so different about you as a teacher. And so much of your philosophy that you shared with us today is that it's training this connectivity. It's training this way of showing up and engaging music and being more present. And I guess what we see in sports is that a lot of people aren't very intentional about that. And so, you know, you seem to be.
Yeah, I bet to get back to Tim's question, I bet the vast majority of musicians are just like the vast majority of serious athletes, and that they've put in a lot of time training, and maybe the time could have been better spent, or yeah, definitely, now that I think about it, because I know plenty of musicians that have a lot of anxiety when they about performing. And I think that is something that would be really greatly eased if they had just sort of a more, if they spent a little more time focusing on not having anxiety. You know, or like, you know, just like, how do I do this without anxiety? I'm going to spend some amount of time, you know, every day, trying to focus, you know, trying to practice relieving my anxiety, because that's one of the problems I'm having as I play right now. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to dedicate 5 minutes out of every time I practice to seeing if I can make myself less anxious. Yeah. And I bet very few of them do it. And I bet, now that I think about it, I bet a lot of them could use it. Mm-hmm. I know, you know, I bet kind of everybody can use that.
Well, and unfortunately, we have to wrap up the conversation here, but thank you so much for joining us and for your perspectives and for, I can say on a personal level, all that you do. My family loves you, and we appreciate you, and we appreciate your time today.
Yeah, thank you very much. I was thinking about what I was going to say today, and you know, it was MSPE that really, your all's book, you gave it to me, I guess it must, because I feel like I've been doing it for 2 years now. Your all's book was, when you gave me that book, that was a that was a momentous thing for me and my practice schedule here. Because I had, you know, I dabbled in meditation, but never successfully. And I think it was the guided meditations, and those were the first guided meditations I ever heard. And they were a big milestone for me. So thank you both for what you do.
Oh, well, that's, we appreciate that. That's always definitely so gratifying to hear. Mark, I did mention your website at the start, but if anyone's interested in reaching out, if interested in learning from you or want to connect with you, anything else you wanted to pass along, any ways to engage you?
If you go to markcaponi.com, markcaponi.com, you can certainly reach me there or through there. You can find out lots of stuff about me and hear music and reach me.
And Rocknoceros has a website too. Is that still up?
Rocknoceros.com will show you more about Rocknoceros, and you can hear Rocknoceros. And usually you can see our schedule, but since everything is currently in lockdown, we are not. I think every show that was on our, I don't know what we, there's nothing, our calendar is no longer online right now because so much of it has been canceled. But
you guys were doing a couple of jam sessions, right? On Facebook Live, or are those still?
Yeah, we still do that a couple times a week. The shelter sessions are still happening.
Yes.
So you can see there's all of the shelter sessions that have happened are in a playlist at the front page of rocknoceros.com. And if you're on Facebook, you can follow Rocknoceros. And randomly throughout the week, usually sometime between 10:30 and 11, you will see us live. But even if you miss us live, you can always find those performances at rocknoceros.com.
Great. Well, thank you again. This was wonderful. And certainly for any listeners who want to connect with us, you can go to our MSPE website at mindfulsportperformance.org. We also have an MSPE Facebook page. On Twitter, you are welcome to follow me, Dr. Keith Kaufman. My handle is at mindfulsportdoc. And of course, we want to thank our producer, Taylor Brown from University of Texas at Austin, and our colleague, Dr. Carol Glass, for all of her support. So thank you for all your time today. Thank you to everyone who listened. And thank you again, Mark.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mark. And thank you, everyone, for listening. See you next time.